When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I think it's also huge for Mahomes in the argument of, is he going to finish as the best football player of all time as well? If he was able to do that.
Oh, my
because
God, yes.
He gets, obviously, more credit than anyone else. Reed would probably get the second most, but it would be more so a Mahomes accomplishment than anyone else on that team, and that probably puts him in a situation where he has that over Brady.
Great point. Because it's still going to be difficult for him to catch Brady. Well, Brady has 7 Super Bowl rings. But this would be 4. How old is Mahomes? I mean,
yeah, I don't even think he's 30 yet, is he?
Ron, before he left, said there was 0 chance that Mahomes would match Brady in Super Bowls. And I thought that was crazy. I did. I thought you can't say there's 0. You just can't say. He was already up to 3. What if he gets his 4th this year? What if he gets his 4th? I mean.
And Brady got 3 pretty late in his career.
Exactly. So, but you're right. Even if he winds up with 3 or 4 or 5, yeah, you could always say, well, Brady had 7, but then the Mahomes comeback every single time, the Mahomes comeback would be, yeah, but did he ever get 3 in a row? Did he ever get 4 and 6? But did he get 4 and 6? Was Tampa his 4th and 6th? I don't know, but he never got 3 in a row. So that would be something that Mahomes, he's only 29, for God's sakes. He's only 29, Sean.
He probably has legitimately 12 years still to go if he wants to play that long, which most of these guys seem like they do want to play as pretty much as long as possible.
I can't help what feelings arise in my body. None of us can, right? It's like saying, yeah, I can prevent strep throat. I can't. And the feelings that arise when I'm watching the Chiefs are, I'm annoyed. I'm sometimes angry. I'm highly irritated. I'm sick of them.
I feel that, buddy. I was on the wrong end of 2 Super Bowl losses to them.
The way they win is at once incredibly admirable and unbelievably infuriating. Like they're getting beat, 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 beat. And then you know when that guy gets the ball, he's going to win. And I've seen it as somebody from Buffalo twice firsthand. 13 seconds left, they win. And then last year, the Bills miss a 27-yard field goal that would have forced overtime. But it took Mahomes going down the field before that. It's always with he's a genius. He's a football genius, by the way. He always knows, I think, before the snap a lot of times, and maybe that's part of Andy Reid's genius, where to go on those short little passes. Because that's what it is. He nickels and dimes you to death at the end of the game every time. And it's him, and it's Andy Reid, and it's Travis Kelce, and it's Taylor Swift, and I like her, and my daughter likes her. But it's annoying. And I don't want them to win anymore. It's frankly like watching the Steelers of the 70s for people outside of Pittsburgh. So these guys again? What? Again? I have to see this again. No, I don't want to see it. It's probably like watching, you know, the Penguins. It's like watching the Yankees. And now it's like watching the Chiefs. But there's an added layer of annoyance with the celebrity factor and the way that they do it. It's 1,000 paper cuts with Mahomes.
I truly feel like,
please stop. I can't take it anymore. Even the regular season games.
He has an it factor that probably in my lifetime only Michael Jordan has had. You just assume somehow, some way, he's going to win a game at the wire.
Jim Rooney is in the building. Oh, what the heck, Jim? Will you want to weigh in on this?
He doesn't have 4-6.
Press that blue button.
Who?
There you go.
He doesn't have 4-6.
You're right. So he doesn't have 4-6, but that was the topic at the beginning here. I'll tell you all about this coming up. I have Jim Rooney here for the next 2 hours, son of the legendary Dan Rooney and author of a book about his dad that came out a number of years ago, A Different Way to Win. And now there's an audio book out. And we talked about it, I don't know, was it a month ago you were in here,
Thanksgiving,
Jim?
I'm your Thanksgiving. Partner. Pomp doesn't work on holidays, so you have to call
Are
me
you
in.
Part-time Pomp
exactly.
On a holiday? Are you
I'm
kidding?
I'm holiday Pomp.
Holiday Pomp. So let's talk about that, this topic at hand right here, because you're a very astute football man. I love talking to you about that. And let's talk about the book. That's coming up next.
Anything you want, Joe.
With Jim Rooney. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge. Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. The Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. Yeah, we're going to talk a lot of football. And then in the 1 o'clock hour, I have a very special treat. I don't know if anybody saw the kid who made the full-court basketball shot.
You have him in.
I'm going to call him.
All right.
Just called him. Did you see that, Sean?
I did. It unfortunately wasn't a great camera angle, but it was just one of the more incredible. I mean, it was like 85 feet, right? I mean,
how long is a basketball court?
I think 94, if it's regulation.
Then it was 93. If it's 94, then it was 90.
It was just a
he took an inbound
the distance.
He's a quarterback, and he turned and he chucked it like a quarterback, and then he went to his knees and sort of like looked, just took a sneak look at it, and it went in. Was it the greatest basketball shot in history? Have you seen a better one?
I saw 9 better ones from Malzi, but other than that, no.
I mean, I think we might have the kid who authored the greatest basketball shot there ever was in the 1 o'clock hour, and then we're going to get into some predictions. But for the next 2 hours, from 11, well, it's going to be 11:15 now, 11:15 until 1, Jim Rooney talking Steelers. You'll want to stay around. Fan weather. Brought to you by Sun Chevy, 0% financing on all 2024 Chevy EV models up to 60 months through January 3rd with credit through GM Financial. Light rain possible today. High of 40, mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 32. Good weather for Santa. Did you add that line?
Do you like that?
Yeah. That's not good weather. Yeah. Is it going to snow?
Does he want it to snow? I don't know what.
I think Santa, if you asked him, yeah.
Probably
he gave
true.
Him choices, he would say.
Makes it travel a little bit easier without any snow, though.
Yeah. Why don't we leave with the Malzi song? I don't know if Jim's heard it. Jim, did you hear the Malzi Christmas song?
I have not heard the Christmas song.
We give, press that blue button. There you go. We give Malzi all kinds of hell on this show. Of course, he does. He comes back at me all the time. He has a large, you're good over there. He has a large cranium. And you know, he rips us, we rip him.
That means he's smart.
He is very smart. Right? Well, he's very smart, and he uses big words. You'll hear that in the song here. I recruited a couple of women from the sales department, including Gwen Gold, who's a professional singer. She sang. Do you have headphones over there?
No headphones.
He needs headphones. Can he hear it in here? Here's a pair of headphones.
All right. Yep. All right.
You have to hear this because Pomp's solo is the stuff of legend. Burl Ives has nothing on him. He's got absolutely nothing on Pomp.
Are you singing?
Yeah, you'll hear me in the background. And I wrote it. I wrote it during a break. And I also did the arrangement where I had the female singers over there as a group of three, Bob to my right, and I pointed to Bob to sing the solo. Hit it, Sean.
Is it going to be like a Lennon-McCartney thing?
Now, the Fan's Christmas Chorus brings you Malzi the Snowman.
Oh, Malzi the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul. With a giant bald head and a button nose, his favorite pitcher was Garrett Cole. Oh, Malzi the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the listeners know how he came to life one day.
There must have been some magic in that oversized hat they found. For when they placed it on his head, Mousy danced around.
Oh, Mousy the snowman was alive as he could be. He used giant words and his favorite GM was a man named George McPhee.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Well, this is a perfect segue here on Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everybody out there. We were just talking about the 70s Steelers and the idea of would a three-peat surpass what they did, which was back-to-back twice and 4-6. And I wound up reaching out to Mel Blunt, Joe Green, Jack Ham. Ham was definitive. It would be better. Hate to say it, but it would be better. Mel Blunt, not so much. Joe Green then broke the tie by saying if they win three in a row, they're in the catbird seat, he said, with everybody else from history chasing them. Here to talk about that, here to talk about his book, A Different Way to Win, about his father, Dan Rooney, which has become an audio book, a must-listen audio book, is my friend Jim Rooney. Jim, how are you?
Joe, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everyone.
You're good.
We're still figuring out the technology after 20 minutes sitting in this chair.
It took Ron Cook almost 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great line. Ron would be late on every segment. It was incredible.
So I'm only one step behind Ron.
Yes.
There we go.
It's good to see you, buddy.
I like that. You too. You too. It's good to be here.
What do you think of the topic? If they three-peat, does that accomplishment surpass any other from the Super Bowl era anyway? It's a tough one, isn't it?
I mean, it is. And look, this is a sports station, so I get that we want to focus on sports. But, you know, they have maybe the greatest player of all time, debatable, but certainly a guy that's on that trajectory.
Yeah.
You know, we had, 24 great, great players? You know, I don't know that you will ever find a team that's like that team. And if you look at the Raiders and the Cowboys, they had multiple Hall of Famers on their team. So, I just think that era and that team, you know, the contributions from Bill Nunn and the fact that we had players that really wouldn't have gotten an opportunity 5-10 years before. The state of Pittsburgh, and not that everyone doesn't have something unique about their city, but you know, the death of the steel industry and the way that we all knew it after 100 years of being what this town was about economically. There was so much that came together with the Steelers of the 70s. If you want to say another team's on-field record is somehow better, fine, but there's no better story in football than the Steelers of the 70s.
And I would say no better team. I would agree with that for sure, that team, the actual roster, the people on the field, I think that was the greatest team in NFL history. And as we sit here today, the greatest dynasty in terms of sheer accomplishment as well. Twice back-to-back and 4 of 6. So, yeah, I think it's important for me anyway to delineate between, would this Chiefs team be a better team than those Steelers? No. Would the magnitude of the accomplishment top it? Maybe. It's a matter of debate.
Let's beat them tomorrow and do what we can to stop that progress.
Yes.
You know, take the first step comes tomorrow.
They still have to do it. But that leads to and there's a lot left to do. There's a reason that nobody has won 3 in a row. But that leads to another topic that I discussed with Ham, Green, and Blunt. The 76 Steelers. Jack Lambert, and if I'm not mistaken, your grandfather told NFL Films that was the greatest Steeler team of all. Jack Lambert said that. Jack Ham reiterated that to me yesterday. Mel Blunt believes that. But then I went to Joe Green. I said, Joe, do you agree with all these people that it was your greatest team of all? And he said, without hesitation, oh no, I never thought that. Joe Green said, we didn't win. That settles it all for me. Your thoughts?
Wow, that's Joe. That's why you love Joe. That's why, you know, Joe did the foreword on the book. He talks about my father. They talk about their relationship related to the Hall of Fame and both of them being Hall of Famers. And I think both of them thought that way. Like, that was a special team in 76. And on paper, you had the offense really revving into the next stage and the defense was at pretty much full strength, but they didn't win, you know? And there is something about those rings.
Well, what I remember from the outside of the 70s Steelers is the Steelers-Raiders rivalry. And for my money, there's never been a better one in any sport, actually. And I've watched a lot of sports over the last 50 years. What do you remember about that? Just the high level of play combined with the hostility. What do you remember as a little guy running around and thoughts in that building about the Raiders?
Yep. And if you think about it, I think I'm right. 72, you know, is the Immaculate Reception. 73, we lose to them in the divisional round. 74, we beat them in the championship. 75, we beat them in the championship. 76, they beat us in the championship.
Yes.
I mean, is that 6 years in a row?
I think so.
I think that's, yeah. You and I aren't too quick on the math. But I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you saw Dallas and San Francisco in the 90s, but every year we played each other, and I hated the Raiders, you know. And then we were in the lawsuits off the field,
right,
with them. I mean, it was such a crazy, crazy time. What's really interesting is you know, Al Davis, the great Raiders owner, and my grandfather, the chief, were really close. They talked on the phone on a very regular basis.
Really?
And, you know, the chief was, you know, we talk about all the good things of the chief, and he was awesome. But, like, he liked giving it to people, too, a little bit, giving them the business. And I think he genuinely liked Al, but he knew how much I think it pissed my dad and Chuck off that he was close with Al. And so he would give it to them a little bit. Oh, I talked to Al Davis. They're thinking about doing this. Or, you know, he'd give them a little bit of the business about, you know, maybe Al Davis is a step ahead of them. And I think it drove them both crazy.
That is great. It's Jim Rooney here, Dan's son. And the book is A Different Way to Win, which came out how many years ago, Jim?
So the book came out in 2019. And then the audiobook came out on November 19th.
And so, that's what we're here to talk about, is the enhanced audio version.
We enhanced it. We added all these interviews of the guys you just spoke of. We didn't have Hammer on there, who is so fantastic. But Mel is in there in a really important conversation. Joe does the foreword. And Rocky finishes the Steeler section. Mm. Coach Cower, Coach Tomlin are in there. My brother Art is in there. So a lot of really cool interviews that I think Steeler fans would enjoy. And then I think there's one more we're going to talk about in one of these segments. One more guy we interviewed who's very relevant over the last couple of days.
Who's that?
Franco.
Ah.
So we have the interview with Franco, which was just so cool to get that. You know, it was amazing. I spent a lot of time with Franco sort of after his, clearly after his playing career, but you know, in the last 20 years of his life, I was at a lot of events with him. I traveled with him to a lot of events. And, you know, I've had the fortune to be around a lot of great athletes. I can't say that there's anyone as a person who was as committed to the community. There's so many great guys. You know, we talk about Mel and what he does, and he does amazing work. Wolf and Tunch, what they did with you know, the homeless and the hungry in Pittsburgh. Robert Golden, a more recent guy. Jerome Bettis, more recent guy. You know, these guys that just spend so much time in the community. Franco did that, and he never stopped. Just was always willing to talk to everyone, willing to shake every hand. I'd take my dad to events with Franco, and you know, Dad was getting old at this point. And we would have to, he'd be like bugging me because Dad then would have to be awake the whole time. You know, he was losing that energy when you get a little older.
Yeah.
And Franco stayed till midnight if he needed to shake every hand, sign every autograph, just make sure everyone that was there was taken care of. So, you know, you hear nice things about my family, but Franco set the bar higher for us. And I think that's something that it was just so special to have a chance to get close to him. And you get to hear him talk about some of those things, including the Immaculate Reception, in this audiobook. My publisher needs me to make sure I say that.
Yeah, I mean, of course. And what's the best way for people to get the book, Jim?
There we go, Joe. Now we're on the sales side. So you can download the book at iBooks, which is Apple, Audible, which is Amazon, Google Play, or BarnesandNoble.com.
Beautiful. Well, I think yesterday was the anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. The last time we spoke, you and I, you really told me a moving story about how that affected your family. I mean, obviously this was, you know, maybe the greatest play in NFL history still to this day. And we all knew it was big at the time, but none of us are the Rooney family. What was it like inside of your house that day?
Yeah, and to get to share this with Franco, he kind of, you know, I was interviewing him for the book, but then no, as you know, Franco, he turned it around and he kind of took the conversation over and started asking me about it. And it was really cool to get to reflect. You know, I remember my brother Dan, who's a scout for the team, my mother, were the first ones home. We always had to go in waves because there were so many of us going to the game. So we'd always have two or three cars headed down to the stadium.
How old were you at the time?
So I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
And so I did not go to the game, and obviously I didn't watch the game, as so many people have told me they watched it. And I'm like, well, you know, were you in Buffalo? You know,
I did watch
right,
it. Actually,
you could have watched
but
it,
but nobody. It was blacked out here.
It was
yes,
blacked out here because the blackout rule. So, so they get home, and you could tell everyone was excited. People had heard it on the radio, you know, things like that, and the smiles they had on their faces, the tears they had. My brother, who I don't think has hugged me since, like gives me this big, big hug. My mother was just like, it was so cool to see. And then about an hour later, my father walks in and I've never seen him smile. You know, whatever he does, the good or bad of Dan Rooney, does worked his butt off, tried to get important things done. The minute was done, Super Bowl, Ireland, whatever, he moved on to the next project as soon as he finished. And that day, he had his biggest smiles I'd ever seen. There was just euphoria. And it was, you know, I do wonder, am I reflecting on the, like, I remember those smiles, but am I reflecting because it became so important, or was everyone aware in that minute? And I really feel everyone had some sort of awakening, whether it was, you know, led us to where we went or not, I don't know. But there was something that happened in that moment that was magical, for lack of a better word.
Mm. Wow. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers changed forever that day.
Exactly.
Right?
Absolutely. You know, and Joe Green always said the Steelers never won before Franco, and we haven't lost much since him. So. Mm.
I love that.
Love that.
What about your grandfather, the chief? What kinds of memories do you have of him? Any story will do. I'm sure you have about 8,000 of them.
Well, I think I told the one at the baseball, you know, sitting, hanging with him, going to the baseball games, which was so much fun. He loved going down to the Bucks locker room. You know, the Cobra, Dave Parker just got put in the Hall of Fame. And I remember, you know, being a kid and walking down that backside of Three Rivers, where between the Steelers locker room, the visiting baseball locker room, and then the Pirates locker room. And so I don't know where this is, but we're in there once with the Pirates, and I'm, you know, I'm 12 probably by this point, and Chuck Tanner's, you know, yakking it up, and my grandfather's talking to all the players, and he goes over to Parker and says, hey, you know, my grandson really loves you. You know, I'm a big fan. And, you know, it's just a really cool minute, and Parker gives me his bat. So somewhere I have Dave Parker's bat, wow. And that's only because the chief, you know, hung out down there. And I remember us sitting on the bench the day they traded for Bill Matlock. And so we're sitting on the Bucks bench at, you know, batting practice, and they just brought Matlock in, and that became such an important part of them getting that World Series in 79. So that was,
wow.
That was a cool time hanging out with the chief. He loved baseball. I don't know if he liked baseball more than football, but he spent more time playing baseball.
Did he?
Yeah. He was a really good baseball player. His brother, Dan, who became a priest, almost made it to the Cubs. The chief was in the Red Sox system for several years. So I can tell you a good baseball story about the chief. I don't know where you are with time here, but
please, we don't have time on this show. Right,
good,
Sean?
Good. Yeah, you can talk as long as you want. You can talk until 1:15.
You'll just put an ad on.
1:15.
Throw me off. Exactly. Got enough.
Please.
But so my grandfather was playing baseball at Georgetown University. And I think it was about the eighth school. I think he invented the COVID rules 100 years before you had it. I think he played 4 years at Duquesne, 4 years at Georgetown, and 4 years at St. Bonaventure.
Mm-hmm.
But so he's down at Georgetown. And he goes up to the coach and says, he's a catcher. And he says, you know, I was drafted by the Red Sox. I'm going to go up there this summer. I'm not going to train down here with the team. And the coach at Georgetown says, you're not good enough to make this team. You're not going to make the Red Sox. I don't know why you're wasting your time. So that was his moment at Georgetown. And got the truth spoken to him.
Did he box too?
He was a good boxer. You know, he was invited to, the story is he was invited to the 1920 Olympics, didn't go. But a guy named Sammy Mossberg, who won the gold, came home, and the chief beat him in a bout in 1921.
So, wow, I knew none of that.
Yeah. So he was supposedly a very good welterweight.
Interesting.
So, yeah, interesting story. You know, the chief's father, well, grandfather, really had come from Ireland, and you know they started to make it because of his work in sports. But my mother was going to put me in this boxing program. And now everyone's in a boxing program, but she was going to put me in this boxing program. And my mother grew up, you know, she came from a family of you know, who's they were Irish immigrants, her parents, they'd worked really hard. So my mother wasn't, you know, she was tough. She wasn't, you know, she didn't live in the suburbs or anything like that. You know what I mean? She was a tough lady. So she's putting me in this boxing program. And the chief calls her up. He hears about it and says, look, I box so none of these kids have to.
Mm.
And I always thought that was one of the coolest statements someone's ever said, and you know, to think about that, to think about what these athletes do, the pain they go through, the challenges they go through, what they're willing to do to their bodies, and I think so many times it is for their family.
You did know, you ever step in a ring?
No, I never stepped in a ring. Joe, you and me have practically been in rings, and I don't think it's you know.
I'm just curious.
Maybe she had a you dancing ready. Ring or something.
She had you ready know. For a boxing program.
Yeah, she wanted me to box. She knew I was going to get my butt kicked. I think that's where I learned how to talk my way out of getting my butt kicked.
I was only in one fight in my life, and I'm 0-1. Tony Roloff beat me up with his backpack, I might add, because I was singing a song about him in In junior high. Did you ever get in fights?
So I got in a fight with this kid. He was a close friend. I got in two fights with two close friends, but this kid, Eddie Dramble, most embarrassing situation of anyone, you know, you could ever imagine. My sister Joan was a year younger than me, but she was a really good athlete. So Eddie Dramble and I fight at the bottom of the steps outside of our school, and he decks me, and I go down to the ground, and I open my eyes, and Eddie's right next to me. My sister Joan, as soon as Eddie hit me, Joan decked him and knocked him on the ground next to me. So that's who I need is in my ring is my little sister. And she was my younger sister. So I was like, I remember how mad I was at her, and my dad was laughing the whole time when we told him the story.
That is so great. Yeah, so you're 0-2 then? I'm 0-1 in my career.
Yep. I have diabetes. So one time I'm in this fight with this kid and he's beating my butt. And I said, Matt Smith is his name. I said, Matt, I need an orange. So he jumps off and gets me an orange, stops the fight.
Sean, you have a record? Do you have a win at least?
I am 0-0.
0-0.
So I've never lost.
The man of peace.
That's right.
It used to be, it would happen the fight by the flagpole, either metaphorically or real, after school. We really had a flagpole at Smallwood Drive Elementary School. Do you remember that when the buzz would start?
Oh, yeah.
This kid and that kid are going to fight at the flagpole,
yep,
right?
Absolutely, after school.
It's always such a spectacle.
It was the
two people
thing.
Fighting, you know, boxing. That's why people are attracted to it still, or forms of it.
I took on a few fights that didn't turn out because I was willing to go up against some guys who were bigger than me, and I don't think they were ready for someone to challenge. And I remember when they, you know, when the kid would walk home that wouldn't get in the fight.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh, thank God. <I'm> so right. Happy I didn't have to go to that fight.
Well, you had an extremely unusual childhood that I want to ask you about. At training camps, in locker rooms, you just mentioned it. I mean, the rest of us were watching from the outside. You were in the fishbowl, whether it was baseball, whether it was football. I want to ask you about that. And of course, more about the book, A Different Way to Win. Jim Rooney, story, book about his dad, Dan. And it's been enhanced into an audio book. Let's talk about some of those interviews, too. Your one with Franco in particular. I'd love to ask you about Jim. That's all coming up. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And then we have all kinds of things happening with FanDuel right now. NFL Monday night games. Of course, we have the Christmas games tomorrow, though, is the real story here. And you can get in on it. We also have tons of NBA. NFL playoffs almost here, but it's not too late to get in on the regular season action in partnership with Valley Forge, America's number one sports book. Because right now, new customers can finish the season strong with $250 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. FanDuel has all kinds of ways for you to pick up a W tomorrow. Not only can you bet who will win the game, but FanDuel also has bets for which players will score, how many points each team will score, you get a hunch in the middle of a game, things like that. Just visit FanDuel.com/Starkey to join today. That way you'll be set for the biggest games of the year. That's FanDuel.com/Starkey for your chance at $250 in bonus bets. 21 plus, present in Pennsylvania. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Jim Rooney joining me for the next hour or so. Son of Dan and author of a book called A Different Way to Win. And we're talking about that right now, just some great stories. And it's been enhanced as an audio version of that book with new interviews, additional interviews, interviews that you can actually listen to, hence the term audio book. Tell us a little bit about some of those, Jim, how those came about. Maybe Joe Green doing the intro, and what a voice he has. That must be incredible.
Yeah, Joe is so powerful. And I had asked him to write the foreword for the book. So this was 5 years old. And, you know, he did a fantastic job, and we worked back and forth. He had written a foreword, and then we said, here's some things that are traditionally a foreword. So you know, kind of getting to go back and forth with him. And then we did this piece of audio. We did a couple pieces of audio kind of early on in COVID. So we had this company go to Joe's house with basically, you know, an audio set like this station here. I don't know, it was quite this big, but it was big. Everyone was in masks. It was, you know, all the distancing, all that stuff. So they set it up, and Joe read the intro, and you know, he's just so powerful, and his affection for my father and his belief that my father really helped him grow as a person, and that allowed him to not just be the great football player he was, but to be the captain, to be the leader, to be someone who I think became, you know, the right type of motivator for so many other folks whose then their careers took off. And maybe they would have otherwise, but I always believe there is something about leadership and mentorship that you know, allows folks to grow from being good to something really special. And Joe did that, and he gives my father credit for helping him to be able to do that. And so that's sort of what the foreword describes Joe in Joe's voice, which is awesome.
Sure is. Just talked to him last night, as a matter of fact, about this, about the whole comparisons to the Chiefs. Interestingly, by the way, he thought it might be good for the Chiefs to lose a game. And wouldn't it be nice if it was the Steeler game, he said. But he honestly believes that. He said, there were years where I thought, you know, we were going really well down the stretch, and I didn't mind in the end if we lost one of those games going into the playoffs. And the word he used was it would refresh us for the playoffs, sort of remind us that, yeah, we could be beaten. He thinks it might be good for the Chiefs to lose once here before they get to the playoffs. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with Joe Green.
Tomorrow would be the best time.
Tomorrow would be the best time for the Chiefs to lose. I like that you have the mini Travis Kelce there, making him look diminutive over in the corner of the station here.
Yeah.
You guys ripping on Travis Kelce. You better be careful, because he's really a big dude. So
I don't know what happened there. That must be a Crowley creation that over there.
He's about eight times that size.
Yeah.
And you know, his shoulders are almost as big as Joe Green. So I wouldn't mess with Travis Kelce.
No, me neither. You said you had a little item about tomorrow's
game.
Yeah,
we got some cool things. So you know, Netflix is in town. This game is on Netflix, and we're all complaining about it, which I understand.
And it's local on KDKA.
Local on KDKA. I don't know if Pomp will be there, but
if he feels like it, he will.
And Pomp deserves Christmas and New Year's Christmas off. I'm teasing. I love Pomp and his family.
We all do. Yes.
But so Netflix is doing a couple cool things. So one of the things they're doing, you know, the great Netflix show Squid Games. So Squid Games is this game where they're trying to figure out, I don't want to give the whole plot away, but basically it's like this real time, it appears like someone's going to get murdered type of thing. And so we're going to have people dressed in the costumes of Squid Games throughout the Great Hall, and then they're all going to be in one section. It's kind of like a freaky little thing, because it's one of those shows that kind of scares you. So it's going to be kind of cool. They're going to take over a section at the stadium tomorrow, and so Netflix has a couple fun things like that going. A woman named Claire Jones has been leading the Netflix engagement here, and Claire is a Yinzer. She's from Pittsburgh, so it's always good when we get a Yinzer who made it big to come home and produce something related to the Steelers, Penguins, Pirates, whatever. But Claire's been kind of putting all the projects, the Netflix projects, together this week.
That's cool. Maybe Donnie Football can somehow get involved in that project. If he's in the crowd, they should find him.
Exactly. We got to get him a Squid Games outfit, though.
That would be great to do that with Donnie. Can you imagine him on the Netflix special, Sean?
That would be outstanding. I think Donnie would be up for that.
So do I.
I know Callis definitely would be up for that.
And there's no doubt Donnie will be at the game, correct?
Yes, although he is, I believe, hosting our pregame coverage tomorrow.
He is?
I'm pretty sure he is. I'll double check on that. He's a busy man.
Jim, do you get cranky when they lose?
Pretty much, yes. You know, for a couple hours. A
couple hours, it wears off?
A couple hours, then you gotta move on. But yeah, my wife doesn't like me around when we lose, so I usually am at the mall or something, walking the dog. I'm often walking the dog outside after a loss.
But it does wear off. Did your dad get, how would he be after games?
He was a little more measured than me, but he, you know, no one, you can't be in this industry if you like losing, you know, and the guys that hate to lose, I think they're all the difference makers. Joe hated to lose. Lambert hated to lose. Like I was scared in the locker room. Joe had retired, but like I was in that locker room and we weren't quite as good. You know, most of those guys retired and Lambert was there for that, those last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, you just, you know, they were professional, but those guys that hate to lose, they're the difference makers, I think. Everyone wants to win. It's the people that just refuse to lose that I think make the difference.
Well, I was going to ask you, speaking of being in the locker room when you were little, what that was like, because in my profession, at least when I was writing more, the press box used to be, and I don't think I just missed this, but it used to be, you know, cigarette smoke filled, you know, crazy places to be. Would guys light up a cigarette in the locker room back then? Lambert had a heater every once in a while, didn't he? What was it like to be in those locker rooms back then? Would you go in right after the games?
If I was in the locker room, it's because I was working. So I was in the locker room during, after, before many games, training camp. You know, I worked in that locker room. I picked up socks and jocks my entire life. From the time I was in, I think I started in sixth grade, which was, you know, completely child labor, against any child labor law that exists. Right. And, you know, I worked there until my senior year in high school. And then I got a promotion to intern for the PR department. I worked for the great Joe Gordon, who was our
The great
PR
Joe
director.
Gordon, yeah. Yes.
So I got to work for Joe for a couple summers up at camp. But, you know, I spent a lot of time in that locker room. And, you know, it's a different place. It's a unique place. It's special. As a ball boy or in a role like that, and you know, being part of the my family, you know, we were always aware that the locker room is so special that it was fun. But I was kind of taught to recognize it's their place, not our place.
Yeah,
and so I would do my job. If a guy wanted to talk to me or joke around, I would do that, but I tried to spend more time in the equipment room or the laundry room, not kind of out in their space. It was really important, I think, that players feel like they have a space that ownership, even coaching, is not heavily involved in. And I think good locker rooms do that. And so.